to the Heritage Radio Network. Tonight's show is sponsored by TechServe. TechServe is New York's premier authorized Apple reseller and service provider, serving individual customers, creative professionals, and Fortune 100 companies. TechServe has built a solid reputation on its expertise in technology, sales, and service. As a company that believes in honest and forthright business practices, TechServe is proud to sponsor Heritage Radio Network in the promotion of sustainable lifestyles. Welcome to Why We Cook on HeritageRadioNetwork.com. I am your host, Erica Wides. And welcome to Why We Cook, episode 51. So it's that time again, that time of year again. It's mid-July, and I just got back from Ohio, where I go every summer this same weekend for the annual, this was I think the eighth annual Food and Wine Festival at the Chef's Garden, which I'll explain what that is in a few minutes. Really, it's at the Culinary Vegetable Institute, which is part of the Chef's Garden. This, I think, was my fourth year in a row now attending, and it's always this huge fun fest, this really kind of wild, wacky, crazy fun weekend with also an enormous amount of work involved in the kind of getting ready, getting there, and participating in the event. I was one of the chefs in the event. The Chef's Garden, which I am sure I've mentioned before on the show, and I think I've actually had Lee Jones as a guest. He's one of the farmers. It's a farm, obviously, in Huron, Ohio, which is on Lake Erie. And they grow specialty vegetables like heirloom tomatoes and microgreens and, you know, purple carrots and all kinds of stuff like that. Stuff that you can actually find much more readily now, but when they came into the business about 20 years ago, it was extremely rare and unique produce. And the thing about Chef's Garden, though, is that they sell this stuff only to chefs and directly to chefs. They don't use a distributor. They don't sell retail. There's no middlemen involved. It comes, you know, out of the ground and into a box. You know, if you're a chef, the chef will call in his or her order on a, let's say, on a, you know, Monday night. And Tuesday morning, the stuff is picked and put in a box and shipped out. And it's at that chef's door the next day. I mean, it's pretty fast. They usually get the stuff, you know, from earth to table in 24 hours. So it's pretty amazing. Needless to say, their products are quite expensive, but totally worth it, you know, for a high-end restaurant. And it's all beautiful and perfectly ripe and exploding with flavor because they only pick stuff as they need it. You know, they don't pick their entire tomato crop and then leave it in a warehouse. It gets picked as it's needed. So it's like very high-end stuff. And they use no chemicals, of course, no pesticides. They use only green compost, no manure, no animal byproducts. They don't even use water from the lake. They use municipal water because the lake water has too many toxins, too much heavy metal and stuff left in it from all those years of industry. And they try to keep their farming practices as sustainable as possible, except, of course, for that whole FedEx part. Very sustainable, but then everything gets put on FedEx trucks and planes. And anyway, that's another story. So the Jones family, who are the farmers who own the Chef's Garden, a few years ago decided to also open kind of another arm of the farm, like a research and education kind of branch of the farm called the Culinary Vegetable Institute. And the Culinary Vegetable Institute is a place where chefs can come with their team and, you know, do menu planning, team building, product development, things like that, or just as a retreat. Sometimes like Charlie Trotter comes and brings his team and they hang out for a few days. They also do classes, cooking classes for the public, and they also do earth to table dinners that feature various chefs from around the country. And I was supposed to do one back in February, but Snowpocalypse 2 changed my plans on me. I couldn't get there. My flight was canceled. But anyway, the CVI is this beautiful building, this sort of post and timber structure with this big stone fireplace and this really high-end kitchen that was all donated by Viking. And, you know, every great chef in the world has come through there. Ferran Adria, Charlie Trotter, Thomas Keller, like they've all come there. You know, there's pictures of all of them everywhere. They visit the farm, they taste product, they do research. It's quite the place. So anyway, along with the CVI, there is also the program they have called Veggie U. And CVI helps to fund Veggie U. Veggie U is a fourth grade curriculum program that is designed to teach kids in fourth grade about earth-to-table eating, where their food comes from, how it's grown, all that stuff, how to eat well, how to eat healthy, you know, what your food really is and where it comes from. And for, I think, $200 a classroom gets all the supplies and all the curriculum materials that they'll need to implement that program for a year. And they're in thousands of fourth grade classrooms already. They may be in all of Ohio. I'm not sure if it's the entire state, but they're, you know, working to eventually take it nationwide. So anyway, what I'm getting at here is that this food and wine festival that they hold every year is a benefit for Veggie U, which is that fourth grade program. And so every year I participate, and I've also gone out there and taught classes as a fundraiser for Veggie U because it's a program I really believe in. And so every year I go out there and I participate in the event, and I have a, you know, I have a tasting station, and I have a great old time and see old friends and eat way too much and drink way too much wine. And we raise lots of money for Veggie U by having people basically pay, like, I don't know, $175 or something to walk around to all the stations and taste and sip and watch famous chefs cook on stage and bid on auction items and, you know, things like that. Your basic charity event. Except this one is, you know, on a farm in rural Ohio in this beautiful, beautiful setting. So usually I do my own station and I bring like a coworker or colleague from ICE where I teach to help out sort of as a sous chef. But this year was different. This year I decided to team up with my buddy Beege Flamholtz. And if you listen to this show regularly or occasionally, you may recognize his name, Beege Flamholtz, because I've mentioned him before. Beege is a caterer in Baltimore, and he does really nice, really elegant work, from like small dinner parties up to, you know, weddings for hundreds of people. He does beautiful stuff. And so if you're in Baltimore, you need a caterer, Beege Flamholtz, LLC. So Beege and I met at the event about 4 years ago, the first time I went, and we've been buddies ever since. And we met because we were thrown together as a team quite unexpectedly for a Star Chefs cook-off that they were going to have. It was part of the entertainment for the guests. Three teams were going to compete on stage in a mystery basket cook-off. And there were three prearranged teams, and one of them didn't show up because one of the chefs on that team got so drunk at the airport that he got arrested. And so the team couldn't make it. So Beege and I, who were both just there to kind of hang out and attend the event and help out, were asked to team up and compete in this mystery basket cook-off that was live on stage and emceed by Paula Deen from Food Network fame. You may know her. So we did it, and it was this crazy, surreal experience of cooking basically as a team with a total stranger on stage live with the clock running on those little butane powered cooktops, like tabletop cassette feu, that's what they're called, with Paula Deen kind of hooting and hollering and screeching and emceeing all around us and, you know, trying to steal the show. It was a little weird, but we did it, and actually we won, which caused a huge upset because the other teams had been practicing all year for it, and we just came in and won. Ha, ha, ha. Anyway, that's how I met Beege. And so every year we both attend and have our own station, and this year we decided we would team up. And so that is really what I'm here to talk about today, is our station and what we made on it. So we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the station. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Heritage Radio Network. Tonight's show is sponsored by TechServe, New York's premier authorized Apple reseller and service provider. Welcome back to Why We Cook on Heritage Radio Network. I'm your host, Erica Wides, and I'm an instructor at the Institute of Culinary Education in Manhattan. And if you're a fan of Why We Cook, I would love for you to find us on Facebook. Just search for Why We Cook on Heritage Radio Network. And you can leave a comment, ask questions, look at some pictures. I posted a bunch of pictures from the event on there that I'm talking about. You can check those out. There's also pictures being posted as we speak on the heritageradionetwork.com website on the Why We Cook page. You can also leave comments on that page anytime, and I read them and I answer them, and I would love to hear from you. So anyway, I'm talking about the station that I had at the Food and Wine Festival with my pal Beege Flamholtz. And so you know how I love Vietnam, right? If you've been listening to this show at all, if you know me, Vietnam is my thing, man. I work there a few months a year. I'm involved in a nonprofit program. I go a couple times a year. And I love Vietnamese food like it was my mother cuisine. Like maybe I had a Vietnamese grandmother or something. So this year for the festival, we decided to kind of play with the Vietnamese idea and do a little play on a Vietnamese sandwich called the banh mi. You've probably had one. My radio audience is a very sophisticated crowd, and they know their sandwiches. But if you don't know what a banh mi is, it was perfection in a sandwich. It's really like the Uber. It's the meta sandwich, Uber sandwich. It's a baguette, but it's a special baguette that is made with wheat flour, but also with some rice flour added. And the rice flour makes it super crisp and light, sort of feathery. And that baguette gets warmed, toasted, and then it gets spread with a pork pate, but not like a sort of a French pate, but more like a spiced up Vietnamese style pate. And then it gets some spicy mayo put on it, and then it gets some shreddy barbecue pork, not like southern pulled barbecue pork, like Vietnamese caramelly barbecue pork. And then a few pieces of pickled carrot and daikon go on there for some crunch and some acid. And then the whole thing gets topped with a few sprigs of cilantro. And then they throw on a few pickled jalapenos if you want it kind of hot. That's the classic banh mi. But there are a lot of variations. You could get one with a boneless grilled pork chop. Or you could get them with grilled chicken. Or you could get the sardine banh mi, which I really like. I'm a big fan of sardines. I did a whole show on sardines probably about a year ago. Anyway, in Vietnam, when you buy a banh mi, it's like 60 cents, and the bread gets toasted over a charcoal fire, like a real charcoal fire. And so it gets warm and kind of smoky, and the meats sit out all day. The vendors on the street there, they don't have any refrigeration, so everything just sits out all day. But don't worry, because it's all highly seasoned and cured, and you're not going to get sick. It's fine. And the meats sit out so they get all like oozy with fat and soft and delicious. And then the whole sandwich gets wrapped up in a piece of newspaper. And it is most definitely one of the world's most perfect sandwiches. So, you know, not much good came out of 500 years or so of colonialism. But there were a few fortuitous food phenomena that were a result of the French and other people pillaging Indochina. And one was the bringing of the baguette culture to Vietnam, where it was then, you know, sort of tweaked and perfected upon. And the other was the introduction of charcuterie, which brings us that great pâté. And then, of course, the coffee, introduction of coffee and coffee culture. So it's not all bad, colonialism. It wasn't all a terrible thing. It did bring a few great food things. I mean, you know, it's not so bad. I mean, in India, at least they got a railroad out of the British, right? Anyway, so we thought over the winter about what we were going to do, and we decided to do this banh mi. So we started planning, and we first tossed around the idea of doing it with lamb banh mi, or some other kind of pork, some kind of, you know, heritage pork or some kind of interesting pork. But there's always a lot of pork at that festival. So Beege has this connection with this grass-fed bison farm in Maryland called Gunpowder Bison. And they were willing to donate product to us. So we decided to do a bison banh mi using the bison flank, which they have a lot of because it doesn't sell as well. People are, I think, a little wary of the flank. But actually, the bison flank is really, really tasty and very tender. Way more tender than a beef flank steak, I think. So we decided to go with the bison flank. And then I thought, you know, banh mi's get all these kind of condiments and garnishes. Why not set it up like a make-your-own sundae kind of approach to the banh mi? We'll set up a fixin's bar. So we came up with all these ideas for garnishes and condiments for people to customize their sandwich. And then instead of using the pork pate, I thought, ooh, let's make it a little swanky, give these people something for their money, and let's do some foie gras butter on there. So a little more French, less Asian. But I got the foie gras donated by my employer, so all the better that way. You know, it's for charity. It's for the kids. So we had some snags in all of the shipping and plant. We hit a few roadblocks, a few bumps on the road to Ohio. And this whole thing didn't, it came close to actually not happening. So the plan was that I would prep the foie gras butter, the marinade, and the chili mayo in New York on Wednesday, last Wednesday, then ship it overnight to the farm on Thursday, where they would hold it refrigerated for us, because we were flying in Friday morning and would be prepping on Friday. That way the stuff would be at the farm by Thursday in case, you know, something happened. We'd be okay. Beej's job was to bring the bison with him and order the bread that we were going to get par-baked so we could bake it off Saturday morning. So it would be par-baked frozen, and then we could bake it fresh Saturday morning. Now, there's no source that I know of in the U.S. for teeny tiny little mini banh mi baguettes. If you know of one, let me know. Like hors d'oeuvre size. So we ordered ficelle instead. And ficelle are like long, skinny baguettes. They're like 2 feet long, but they're only about like an inch and a half around circumference. So they're very skinny, and we thought that would be perfect because we could cut them down into like little tiny sandwiches. Usually, ficelles are that size. Well, this bakery in Baltimore had a different idea about what a ficelle was, and on Thursday, Beej went to pick up the bread, and he opened the box, and there were these like 5-inch wide ciabatta loaves in there. Totally the wrong thing. So he called the bakery and fought it out with them, and they promised them, but by 5 a.m., they promised him that by 5 a.m. Friday, in time for him to pick up the bread and make, there'd be time for him to pick up the bread in the morning and make his flight. They promised they would have them done. They'd be the right size. 5 a.m., come pick up the bread. You'll get to the airport. Everything will be fine. So, okay, first crisis averted. That was, when was that? Thursday morning? Thursday morning. Yeah. So then I go to work, and I had, back up a little bit. So I was prepping Wednesday night and at school at ICE, and I, you know, made the foie gras butter, made the marinade, made the chili mayo, packed all this stuff up, packed it all up in a box with ice packs, taped it up, gave the shipping address to the department secretary. She typed up the air bill. I stuck it on the box, sent it off at 6:30 with the FedEx guy. Everything was going to be okay. I thought I was being safe sending it for Thursday instead of Friday. Well, it turns out that somebody put the wrong zip code on the FedEx label. I don't know if it was me or her, but somebody screwed up. And our box went to some other little dinky town in Ohio, where it sat out all night on a loading dock full of melted ice, our marinade, our chili mayo, and 3 pounds of foie gras butter. Not to mention my knives and some other things. So things were getting a little stressful. Now, I knew that there was nothing I could do about it. People from the farm called me. They said, your package didn't come. We tracked it. It's in this town. There's nothing we can do. They're going to resend it tomorrow. So I just, sometimes you have to just let go. Let that happen. So I searched through the freezer. I found a few more pieces of foie gras. I put them on ice. I packed it up. I packed up the ingredients to make more marinade. I got more chili paste just in case. Packed it all in my luggage. Friday morning came, 5 a.m. I get a text from Beej. He picked up the new bread. It's not quite as wide, but now it's about 3 inches wide. We're like, fine, we'll deal with it. It's okay. Went to the airport. He caught his flight. I caught my flight. We all met up in Cleveland. We rented the car. We drove to the farm. The FedEx box actually made it. It was delivered, but it had basically exploded. And a quart of my fish sauce and sugar-based marinade had spilled all over the box. The box disintegrated. It was all in a big plastic bag. There was melted foie gras butter everywhere. It was a fish sauce stinking greasy mess. But miraculously, a full quart of the marinade made it. The chili mayo actually was fine, thanks to super pasteurization on Hellman's part. And I had three chunks of frozen foie gras still in my backpack. So we were in good shape. Another quick break. We'll be right back. I'll tell you how we pulled it all together.
Say life's taking you nowhere.
Angel,
look at that sky, life's begun. Nights are warm and the days are young.
You're listening to the Heritage Radio Network. Tonight's show is sponsored by TechServe. Welcome back to Why We Cook on HeritageRadioNetwork.com. I'm Erica Wides, your host. So I've been telling the story of this event that I did in Ohio this weekend, this food and wine event, where our dish for our station almost didn't come into being because of some technical problems we had on the way. But good news, it all made it. So Beach had packed his luggage full of bison. We had 40 pounds of bison in his luggage. And as soon as we got to the farm, we got changed, we got set up, we threw it in the marinade. Marinade was great. It's a combination of caramelized sugar, fish sauce, shallots, lemongrass, and garlic. And I'm sure I've talked about this kind of thing on here before, but typical Vietnamese-style marinating, you cook your sugar until it's like a dark amber caramel, and then you dissolve it with a little water, and you add all the other ingredients and the fish sauce, and you get this really intense, salty, sweet, delicious marinade that's great on meats. And it gives the meat, it almost brines it. It almost cures it a little bit. And it gives it this really nice deep dark color. So that was going great. The meat was marinating. It's going to be good. I was okay on the chili mayo. Like I said, that was fine. And I took that foie gras. I sliced it up. I threw it on a sheet pan. I seasoned it with some salt. I sprinkled it with some verjus that I found because I couldn't find any cognac or brandy. Blasted that in the oven for a few minutes to heat it up, liquefy some of the fat, chilled it down, solidify the fat, threw it in a food processor with some butter. Boom, that was ready to go. So we pulled it all together. We saved it. Then we set up all our stuff for our fixins bar. So the great thing about this event is you can basically order whatever you want from the farm that's in season, and they pick it all for you, and they give it to you. And so it's like the kid in the candy store of vegetables. You can get whatever you want. It's amazing. So we did all these different pickles. We pickled purple and red dragon carrots, these beautiful heirloom carrots, some black radishes, some turnips, some like little daikon. We pickled sweet corn. We pickled yellow wax beans. And each one had kind of a variation on the brine. The brine was kind of a spicy, sweet rice vinegar-based brine, but then some had chilies in it, some had lime, some had lemongrass, some had chili threads, fennel seed. Each one was a little different. And we put the pickles into cryovac bags, which is vacuum sealer bags, and we threw them in the vacuum sealer so that they would pickle really fast, because you put them in a vacuum and they have no choice but to pickle because the brine gets forced into the vegetable. So that was a good call, doing those in the cryovac. And then we had a whole bunch of sliced up fried shallots, too, for garnish. And we had micro cilantro and micro mint. Now, Chef's Garden micro cilantro is a fantastic, fantastic thing. It still has the little coriander seed, excuse me, attached. So it's an actual sprouted coriander seed that has a little cilantro sprig sticking out of it. So you bite into that, and you get the crunch and the flavor of coriander, and then like the green tang of the cilantro sprig. So it's pretty amazing. So we got all that stuff prepped, and then we went to the Friday night opening party, and we had ourselves a great old time and stayed up too late, and then we went to bed. And then on Saturday, before the event, everybody had to prep out their stuff and present a finished plate, because there's a competition as part of this event, and the competition is run by Steelite, which is this high-end porcelain restaurant china supply company. And Steelite's a big sponsor of the event, and every year they run a competition for the best plate, the best dish. And usually it's a trip. You win a trip to El Bulli in Spain, but El Bulli is closing. So this year it was to go to the French Laundry. And I really, really wanted to win. Last year I came in third. I really wanted to win this year. So we did up our plate and we presented to the judges. Got that done. We set up our station. We put out all of our pickles and our herbs and our shallots all in these beautiful glass bowls. And we had built risers out of these slabs of granite that we found. It looked really, really beautiful. You got to check out the pictures on Facebook, because it looked really good, I must say. And then we grilled the bison and it got all caramelized and crispy, and we sliced it really thin, and we figured out how to fix the bread by kind of cutting a strip out of the middle and toasted up the bread, and that was great. And so we took the bread and we kind of cut them down into these like long, skinny, they were sort of the shape of like a hot dog bun, but made out of good bread. And then we spread those with the foie gras butter and then put on a big splash of chili mayo and then layered on the bison. And then because they're traditionally served wrapped in newspaper, Beach had found these little like French fry bags that looked like newsprint. And so we cut those down to make them even smaller. And each sandwich went in these little tiny newsprint bags. And we put those out. And then people could just come up and take their little sandwich, visit the Fixin's bar, garnish it however they liked, and then chow down. And I think people had a great time making their own. It was kind of interactive. And many people came back for much more than seconds. There was one guy, I think, who ate like 10 or 12. He couldn't stop. And the finished product looked really great. And I'm totally convinced that everything looks better when you miniaturize it. I mean, think about how much cuter a little puppy is than, you know, a big dog. Dogs are cute, but, you know, everything looks better tiny, I think. Shrinking things down makes people love them. And I'm not just saying that because I'm really small. I think it really helps. And I love the concept of taking like a large dish, like a classic sort of size dish, and shrinking it down to bite size. I do that a lot when I cater. But anyway, so this event that almost wasn't actually turned out to be quite a big success. We only came in fourth this year in the competition, so I was a little upset about that. I thought that we really, really had a shot. I thought it was going to come down to us and this one other guy from Charleston. But I was wrong. It's okay. I'm very competitive, but I can accept losing. Other than coming in fourth and all the stress about the bread and the FedEx and potentially not having any of our product, I would say it was a huge hit, and a great time was had by all. So you can check out the pictures on Facebook, and I think there's also the pictures up now on the Why We Cook homepage. And if you live in the Midwest or you feel like going to Ohio next July, you should definitely get tickets. It's a great event, and I'll be there. I'm already planning next year's dish. Beej and I are already brainstorming. I got a few ideas left, and I got a few ideas already, and we have, what, 360-odd days to go to figure it out. So we're out of time. Thanks for listening to Why We Cook on HeritageRadioNetwork.com. Thanks to Nat and Jack in the control room, and we'll see you next week.